Heidi ho, kids. I'm trying something new. Let me know what you think. Welcome to the after show. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me is Mike Rose. Party on, Mike.
Party on, Kelly. Definitely trying something new. Something old, something new, something borrowed from Mike Myers and Dana Carvey.
You know, a little of this, a little of that. I'm feeling a little throwbacky. We're recording on a Thursday.
We are. Thursday midday, and I yes. actually, I just had a little bit of a plosive here and blew dust off my windscreen, so I can tell you that this microphone has been sitting idle for a week or two, but it's back in gear. How are things going? How you doing out there in the West, in the
wow.
great warm West?
Yeah, well, we haven't burned down, which is kind of exciting. I really feel like, you know, we all sort of survived 2016 and we were like, well, good Lord, at least 2016's over. And then 2017 was like, hold my beer, you know,
For real. Seriously.
Because
my God,
like, you know, we used to complain about like this and that and the other thing, you know, and then like this week, I'm just like, I'm not under an evacuation notice yet. Yay. You know, like that's the thing that could happen. The street nearest the numbered major numbered street nearest me is 148th Avenue on the east side of Portland. And I believe it was 223rd was up to a level one evacuation order, which means you should start getting ready for the next level of evacuation, which is now you need to be able to leave at any moment. That's a level two evacuation order.
And this is all
get ready.
And for folks who don't know or who aren't paying attention, who have missed the weather news behind all the other weather news, this is because of fires.
Yes.
This is wildfires near
yes.
Portland.
And it's almost disingenuous to call them wildfires because it was started by a very colorful adjective teenager who was throwing fireworks in the Columbia River Gorge, which is a National Historic Scenic Area, after 2 months of absolutely no rain.
You know, there's not enough facepalm in the world. We're facing a serious facepalm shortage based on this behavior. That's a domesticated wildfire, number one. And number
yes.
two, what would possess somebody to do that?
Well, apparently being 15 makes it okay. I don't know. People are like, oh, you should cut this kid some slack. I'm like, no. I did stupid stuff when I was 15, but none of it involved burning down the state I live in.
Yeah.
I always understood that burn this mother down was not a command. That's not a literal thing that you're supposed to do. So, yeah. Anyway, I'm not ranty about this at all. So I took a carload of supplies to firefighters. I had some people square cash me some, like, this is part of that, like old school, new school kind of intersection. So I went on Twitter and I said, hey, I have a way to get stuff to firefighters and I want to be able to do that. So if you want to help, like, this is a concrete thing. I will take a picture of a receipt and send you the receipt and the stuff that
you bought.
The stuff that I bought with
yeah.
your money. So, you know, like, I know I'm not a charity. I know I'm not, like, legit or anything. But, like, I'm here and you can totally get a hold of me. Like, I'm being super transparent about the whole thing. We went to Costco last night and bought a bunch of stuff at my house. So if you want to help, I have stuff going out tomorrow. And a number of people sent me a little bit of money.
Yep.
And I took that money. And or as I texted Mr. Kelly, I was like, so I went on Twitter and told people we were taking stuff to firefighters. And now I have $200. He goes, oh my God. So I went to IKEA. They had towels and washcloths, super cheap. They had towels for $2.50 and they weren't sandpaper. So I bought a bunch of towels and I bought a bunch of washcloths, like 30 towels and 32 washcloths or something.
And did you
and
then
two IKEA bags?
Then did you speak to them in Swedish and you'd say, okay, Pajorp and Rolfladish, you guys over here, just get them organized.
The best I can do is mock Swedish, like the Swedish chef.
Yes.
So I literally was able to fill the Outback with stuff to take. We had like jerky and fruit leather and like decent granola bars, not like the Nature Valley ones where, like, maybe you're eating the box, but maybe you're eating the granola bar and you can't tell. So, like, ones with flavor.
The ones that you actually use to, like, sharpen a saw blade, those ones you didn't bring?
Yeah, I didn't take them the ones that are, like, weapons. I took them the ones that are food. I'll just
put it out there that as a child of a decade that shall remain nameless, the Nature Valley granola bars were the granola bars of my childhood. And
because they were the only ones. Nobody else was in the granola bar game back then.
No, the granola bar game was a monopoly. The granopoly. The granopoly.
There was no game.
There was no game. It was tic-tac-toe.
It was just Nature Valley.
Big G controlled all the markets. And those were like bars of gold pressed latinum when it came to the lunchroom. I mean, you could trade them for a lot of good shit. So
yeah,
but they were nothing.
Like today, you know, yeah, you look at those like, yeah,
if you fed that to a horse, you might get a dirty look. It was like oats and binder.
Yeah. But. Yeah. So I took like some Kind bars and we had toothpaste and they had like bunches of like personal wipes. So we took a bunch of stuff out there like that and literally filled the entire back of the Outback. So I was like really pleased to be able to do something concrete as opposed to, you know, send money off to an organization and hope that they did something with it.
Yeah.
So I was able to like make a tiny little concrete difference for somebody and I felt like that helped. And then I have a couple of people who have said, hey, are you still doing this? And I'm like, maybe. And they were like, well, here's some money so that you can. I'm like, well, I guess I am now. So I think I'm going to take more stuff out to Hood River. The best part of it to me was like I found a way to make this happen. And Mr. Kelly didn't think twice, was like, I guess we're going to Costco when I get home from work. I'm like, yeah. And he said, tell me what they need. I'm like, here's the text message I have with the information in it. He read through it and he grabbed the cart and he's like, let's go. And didn't even flinch. Like, it was just really, it was really nice that he was like, yeah, this is just a thing that we're doing. I'm taking for granted that this is what's happening. Mm-hmm. And then he came from early from work so that we could drive out there and it wouldn't be dark because we would have to drive on the Washington side because Interstate 84 is shut.
Jeez Louise.
It's been shut for like 2 weeks now. It's going to be shut for another week at least, which is insanity when you think about the amount of just regular commerce that happens on Interstate 84. And then on the Washington side, there's a freeway, the highway,
yes,
that runs along the river on the Washington side called SR-14. And there's about 40 miles in the middle of the gorge of SR-14 that are shut to trucks. So if you are it's the middle of the growing season in most places up here in the Northwest. And so if you're trying to get fruit, which is what a lot of the Columbia Gorge is known for, is pears and apples and cherries and things like that. If you're trying to get that stuff out of the gorge and get it west to places on this side where a lot of food processing happens, good luck. And as an added bonus, a whole bunch of Washington is on fire. So the main route from east to west in Washington is also shut. It's really gotten difficult for a bunch of stuff. And we're going to start feeling the squeeze, like, you know, supplies, like, you know, places that supply grocery stores and places mm-hmm. that supply that kind of stuff, like that all comes down 84. And like, it's not happening right now. So that's been crazy. And then we had not only fires, but then we had this weird west wind that was coming out of the gorge and into Portland, which at one point made the air quality index in Portland zero. And I'm not even kidding about that.
I didn't even know that was a thing that could happen.
Right. Neither did I. And it turns out when you stand at the front door of your house and you look at the car that's sitting in the driveway
mm-hmm.
and you can't see it clearly because the air is that terrible, that air quality index is zero.
Interesting.
It's
air you could eat with a spoon.
Basically,
like the
chunk,
the Campbell's chunky soup of air.
It is. It's the Campbell's chunky soup is absolutely the Campbell's chunky soup of air. So I wrote an article for Mac Observer about like readiness apps for wherever you are.
Mm.
So like have some weather ones and go check out the Wirecutter list of stuff you should have to make sure you're prepared. And here's like a few apps that can be helpful for you, you know, in different ways. Like here are weather apps with radar and here's an air quality index app and here's how you can get like alerts, you know, where you are with different stuff. So that stuff was all sort of crazy. You can like, and then the very weird thing about all of the fires happening was timing. Like, there's a huge one in southwestern Oregon right now called the Chetco Bar Fire. It's the largest fire in the United States right now. I think it's up to 175,000 acres, mm-hmm. I think is what we're at there. Half a million acres, I think, or no, 250,000 acres in Oregon and Washington together are on fire. We might be up to a half now. Which is a staggering amount of land to be on fire. Now, it's more than we normally get during fire season. Like, we do have fires every year. We do have fire. We do have things that catch fire. They're from lightning. They're from whatever. But this one in the gorge that is terrible could have been prevented. And that's the part that, like, is really frustrating about that is, you know, all of the people who live there or visit there all the time and really love it. And it was so, like, that part's been really hard. So, like, we're sort of like, wow, everything in the Northwest is burning down. And the news's reply was, guess what? Now the opposite corner of the state is about to be underwater. So then there was, you know, then we had hurricane, you know, there was hurricanes. And so there's been all this like in like natural insanity happening.
Yes.
And it's been. But I want to talk a little bit about something that happened yesterday, which was actually good.
Well, before we get to the good stuff, which we actually have a lot to talk about this week,
yes.
Because we should mention we are recording on Thursday, the 14th of September.
Yes.
It is a week. It's a week past Irma or several days past Irma. It's past Harvey. We've seen enormous devastation in the South and in the East, Southeast. And we've seen outlying areas and in the Virgin Islands and in the Lesser Antilles. And we've seen, you know, an interesting app story around Zello in particular as a coordinating app for volunteer rescuers and the Cajun Navy, the ad hoc water rescues that were happening,
yeah.
Particularly in Texas, but also now in addition in Florida. But the one thing I want to point out, I just want to mention in the midst of all the really incredibly challenging logistics in Florida and Texas and in the human cost of everyone who has been suffering through this, one of my colleagues, former colleagues, Ken Behrlein at Time Magazine, was in the Florida Keys, actually just north of Cujo Key, which is where Irma first came ashore, where it went down. And he was there with some family, apparently is okay. We lost touch with them they lost touch with the outside world for about 24 hours, and there was some concern that they might have been in some jeopardy, but they appear to be okay. So very grateful for that, and I want to send a shout out to Ken and the rest of the crew there, and hope that they are recovering as gracefully as possible from the situation. But to your point about yesterday, which would be Wednesday, what were you thinking?
Well, partly I was thinking of you because
what I do.
You called me up one day and you said, "Hey, how would you feel about spending 3 days in Florida?" That's why
this is true at Disney World for that matter.
Yeah, how would you like to go to Disney World for 3 days? Sure. So, because yesterday was the Apple event where we got the iPhone 8 and the iPhone 10.
Actually, Tuesday, because today's Thursday.
Tuesday. It's so all blur now.
I know. 2 days ago was the Apple event. No. I know exactly what you mean.
Well, I watched it again yesterday because Mr. Kelly hadn't had a chance to catch up on anything, so we watched it again last night. So I was thinking of you because they had opened, they sort of dedicated the Steve Jobs Theater. It was the first time anybody in the public got to really get a good look. It was the first event they had there. And they talked a little bit about Steve himself, and that's not something that we've had a lot of at previous events. And so it was really nice to see them sort of recognize that. And I feel like if you watch, like one thing I said to Mr. Kelly yesterday when we were watching, I was like, okay, you just need to watch the beginning. I don't know how much you care about the stuff with the watch, so I'll just tell you it as I fast forward by, and then that's the first hour of this, of the thing. And he goes, what do you mean the first hour? I'm like, it was two. He's like, okay. So we were watching it, and then Tim walked out on stage after they played the audio of Steve speaking. And Tim walked out on stage, and I said, they must not have cleaned up all the way, and there must be lots of construction dust backstage. And Mr. Kelly goes, what are you talking about? And I'm like, look at him. And then you see, like, you hear his voice, you know, mm-hmm. he's a little misty. You can see it a little bit. And I was sort of glad to see emotion, I guess, out of them. It was really nice to see that it's that Steve's impact is still felt there. And thinking about that and thinking about Steve being gone and thinking about a new iPhone event, like, it got me too, because of the one that happened where you and I were together at Disney World at an event when all of that happened. And so that was part of what I was thinking about. I was a little, I was reminiscing a little and thinking about having been in Florida and being there with you guys and being like, well, if like this is exactly the right place for me to be right now, as weird as it is, this is where I'm supposed to be somehow.
Yep.
And I always, and there's always a moment that crosses my mind, because I was thinking about Tua and I was thinking about like all the stuff that we used to do, and you know, like just it, like I was just sort of missing that on top of all of the stuff. But it was really nice to see the look forward. I really did. I think the theater is amazing, like from an AV nerd perspective, and I keep saying this, I just would, if Apple would continue to create how it's made videos and make that the original content on Apple Music, I would buy Apple Music.
You would prefer that to Carpool Karaoke? I'm not sure. I'm not sure you're in the majority there.
No, I did. I casually enjoy the Carpool Karaoke. I've really tried Planet of the Apps and I just couldn't do it. But if they're going to, like, they don't have to spend all that money on, like, talent for things. All they mm-hmm. need to do is ask the narrator of how it's made, like, what do we pay you?
Right.
And, you know, where do you record? And, like, just make that happen. Because, like, remember the video we got for the round black Mac Pro?
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
And did they show off any secret stuff that we weren't supposed to know about? No.
Not really.
And did we get to see, like, a really awesome video?
Yeah,
yes, we did.
For sure.
And I want that for all the things.
Well, we're putting that out there in the universe. This is what Kelly would like for all the things, is the How It's Made videos.
Yes.
And we got them. I mean, as is so often the case, it seems like every year I am working at something that does not permit me the flexibility to watch the stream in real time. I caught a bit of it. I was keeping my ear to the Six Colors live blog. There's Dan,
yeah,
and
Jason.
Thank you. I'm like, why was I going to say Joel? That's not right. Jason
Dan
Snell
and not Dan.
Dan and not Dan. Dan Moore and Jason Snell did a great job. And of course the iMore gang and the Mac Rumors gang and everybody. I think with this one, especially due to the late leaks, the late firmware leaks last week. Mm-hmm. For my birthday, you got me firmware that people could dissect, and the idea that there was somehow that this was somehow spoilers, it's like, well, okay, sure, but if you're, it's like knowing that Titanic ends with the boat sinking doesn't ruin the movie.
Oh no, there's a whole bunch of other stuff that ruins that movie.
There's many other things that ruin that movie. But basically, knowing ahead of time what was going to be the primary big ticket items helped me not feel left out, and the fear of missing out was reduced by the fact that I couldn't watch it. However, there are a lot of things happening in the margins and in the periphery. You know, and I want to come back to the idea of the apps for emergencies and the wire cutter recommendations. Speaking of which, the Wirecutter and the Sweet Home are rebranding and consolidating under a single brand, which will be Wirecutter. and the tagline is recommend all the things. So
yes.
So that's happening this fall. I want to congratulate Jackie Chang and the whole team there. And Jackie actually was profiled in the New York Times, the owner of Wirecutter, which was a lovely, which is really actually a very cool profile, and using the incredible the incredible personality of the Times company contributors and employees to create fantastic content, I think is an interesting, always an interesting approach. But it was a great piece, and it was great to see Jackie getting the credit she so richly deserves. And so we're all looking forward to the Wirecutter rebrand, but that's not the thing I want to talk about from the announcement. There are two things I want to talk about from Tuesday forward. One of them is, I'm going to say, not necessarily the most popular decision Apple's ever made, which is the venerable iTunes desktop application has had an appectomy.
Word chipper! What chipper? Sorry.
Just leave it at the dog track.
Sorry, I have like Tourette's when it comes to iTunes. It just makes me swear all the time.
So iTunes 12.7, much to the surprise of people who have automatic upgrades turned on their Macs, actually eliminates two whole categories of content one can browse and purchase, which is, on the one hand, a fascinating retrenchment. On the other hand, it never made sense to have the App Store be part of a music application in the first place.
Right, but they didn't replace it with anything.
Well, you can use Configuration Manager as a, you know, there's other things you can do if you're managing apps in bulk. But when you say they didn't replace it with anything, you mean they didn't replace it with anything on the desktop, because you can use the App Store on your device.
Yes, but it's so much easier on my computer, and I can read more, and, you know, all...
And rearrange your app screens and do all the stuff.
And rearrange the app screen. And here's the thing. What if I don't have Wi-Fi while I'm trying to restore my phone from backup? It expects me to download all those things. And what about stuff that I want to keep that I don't necessarily want on my phone right now?
Well, you still can do that, and there's a tech note on keeping. You can keep stuff in that folder, and I believe you can drag and drop it onto the phone within iTunes. It will still accept app installs that way. The organizing screens for your phone. There's a lot. There's a lot that people have been used to doing that may, in this case, no longer make sense.
I never, ever, ever said it was a good idea to do it this way. But if you're going to take it away, you need to give me another way to do it.
Yeah, which may be a third.
All you've done is take away functionality. Oh, it is.
A third-party opportunity? Yeah, perhaps.
Oh, no, they totally exist. DigiDNA makes an app called iMazing, which is glorious. And you should already have been using it anyway to do stuff like back up the things that you weren't able to back up through iTunes in the first place. It's very inexpensive. And I have been using it for a long time because there was something I was trying to do that iTunes was like, oh, that's what you're trying to do? Lol. And that was it. So... I was like asking about it over at TMO, and Dave Hamilton said, well, why aren't you using iMazing? iMazing does all the things. I'm like, what about this? And he's like, does it? What about that? Does it? What about the other thing? Oh, it totally does that. And it's even better than the way that Apple does it. Really? So yeah. As Jeff said yesterday on Daily Observations, iMazing is probably going to send Apple a fruit basket for taking this away, because it made their app unbelievably more useful.
This is the rare and nearly unknown reverse Sherlocking. It almost never happens.
Yes. Yes.
But it's the reverse half Sherlock. Half the functionality of or certain key functionality of iTunes, which has been stripped from iTunes. And again, not necessarily illogically stripped. And when this is one of those moments when you and I think have to put our muggle hats on.
Yeah.
And I know from family support, from other from friend support, easily 9 out of 10 people who are iOS users do not manage apps in iTunes in any meaningful way. They don't even, they may not even know it's possible. So,
right,
Muggle
but I do have them trained to back up their phones to their computers because none of them are paying for iCloud for addition, are paying for iCloud space to store all of that stuff. And now you have to, because the smallest phone you can get is a 64 gigabyte phone, and all iCloud gives you is like 5.
Well, and you can, I believe this iTunes 12.7 will still let you back up your phone, I believe. I'll validate that in a minute.
It does, but the app section is gone, and so it expects that you're going to just download, it's going to, like, these are the apps that you had on your phone, and then you have to download all of them from the app store over again.
That's what happens in a restore, basically, anyway, in iOS 10. I mean, I have restored phones from iTunes backups more than once in the past 2 years, probably three or four times, and the apps never install over the wire. They always download. And I don't know whether, and I've said, I don't want you to do this. I want my apps to come from my local, like my local repository of all these apps that I've painstakingly downloaded and kept up yet. It's like, nope, I'm going to get them to the Wi-Fi. You can't use your phone for the next 2 hours. I'm like, killing me. But that's the way it's been working. And so I think, again, Muggle Brain.
I swear the last time I did it, I didn't have Wi-Fi and it actually worked.
It may have fallen back to that because you didn't have Wi-Fi. If you do have Wi-Fi, I mean,
oh, so maybe that's it.
That may have been the trick. But
in any case, arg. And yes, I know I'm in the minority because everybody's like, what kind of weirdo plugs their phone into their computer, Kelly?
I know.
It's 2017. Yeah, I know. But
yeah.
Yeah. Just like, I don't have another way to back it up because I'm not going to pay for all of that iCloud storage. For a bunch of reasons, the first of which is I've used iCloud for more than 15 minutes and it has screwed me.
Yeah. Well, so, I am going to pay for that iTunes storage, but I'm going to do it as a family plan, which is starting in a couple weeks with the iOS 11 release, where I will, instead of buying 50 gig here and 50 gig there, I will be able to buy, you know, a terabyte or 2 terabytes or whatever from a fam. And then all, you know, 7 devices will be backing up and I won't have to think about it. And right now I find myself, unfortunately, having to think about it. What I also find myself having to think about is that my devices are filling up because of my photos, which is another problem. Mm-hmm. But that's sort of side business. The primary business is iTunes has now had this functionality taken out of it. It's arguable whether a plurality of users were even aware the functionality was there or used it on any regular basis. It never really made that much sense to have it there. And now we have an opportunity, number one, to change user behavior in a way that makes sense. Number two, we have a great third-party opportunity for apps like iMazing to do cool stuff and innovate, you know, wildly outside the bounds of having to at least be reasonably familiar or cognitively match what iTunes does or did. Mm-hmm. And then three, we have a great opportunity for people to buy some cloud storage. So yay. But that's why I wanted to bring it up, because I was curious whether you were going to be primarily, you know, at last this makes sense, or you were primarily going to be the frustration. And I think it's both.
It's both, because I'm glad that they're finally splitting iPhone stuff out of iTunes, because that's not where it's supposed to be. I get how it happened. I 100% get how it happened, because iTunes was meant to sell iPods, and then they started selling iPods that could make phone calls, and so you just manage them with the thing you were already using, and I get that, and it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally fine. But then they added the movie store, and they added this, and they added that, and they added the other thing, and it just got... I mean, I wrote this article like 3 years ago. iTunes needs to break up with itself. And, you know, why can't we get the Mac version with one of the my favorite graphics ever on a story that I wrote ever. Jeff Gamet photoshopped together a picture of the Burrow from Harry Potter, the house the Weasleys live in.
Yeah.
And in each window was a different part of iTunes. So here's from iOS. So like, here's the app store, and here's the music store, and here's the movie store. Good. It was great. So I'm glad that somebody saw that iTunes had turned into this monstrosity and is starting to try to refine that. What I don't like is that they took away one of the actually functioning parts. And let me have an optional download of an iOS App Store app, because right now, like, if you try those App Store links, they're dead. They don't go anywhere. They don't even, like, load up the web page.
Really?
That's of information. Good. Like, that's as of yesterday, good. They didn't. Maybe they're fixing that. But they wouldn't even load up the web page of description. I don't expect to buy an app off a web page. I'm not trying to say that. But I did like the opportunity to be able to browse on my computer as opposed to on my phone. Because sometimes I'm actually researching something. Like the other day when I wrote my article about readiness apps.
Right. You need to have the content. Yeah. You need to, like, what
I need
app,
to
what,
see, like, yeah. What are all the weather apps that are out there that have radar? Or what are all the apps the Red Cross has available? And being able to see all of those at once instead of having to scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll. And it was really, it was much easier to put my article together because I was able to do all of that on my computer as opposed to having to do it on my phone or even on my iPad. So that's the only reason that I care. Like, I don't need to be able to buy them, but I still want to be able to manage them for a number of reasons.
So the short answer of what happens when you click an app link is you get to the iTunes preview page, and it says, it actually is not that dissimilar from the way you would see a Mac App Store page if you were, for example, on a Windows machine, which is you'd say you have to go to the Mac App Store to buy this. Now this says this app is only available on the App Store for iOS devices, which, you know, okay, cool. And you have handoff, and you have wonderful ways that you can go from the browser to.
Yeah, but can't you tell me about it?
Oh, you know, it does tell you about it. I mean, like, it has all, it's the iTunes preview. So it has all, it, and again, they're going to have to change the name because iTunes preview doesn't make any sense because you can't see it in iTunes anymore. But all the description is there, everything that you would have seen, last week in iTunes, including the screenshots and the reviews and other similar apps, that's all there. So that works. But I take your point that it would be nice to have, and hopefully at some point there will be a button here that says, hey, send this to my phone. You know, there is that share. There's the AirDrop. Maybe this is all a secret plot by the AirDrop product team. They're like, finally.
Well, and which part of it is AirDrop and which part is handoff and which part is continuity? And I don't quite, anyway.
Well, that's a whole nother kettle of monkeys covered in wax. By the way, show title, Kettle of Monkeys Covered in Wax.
I was still back at the Campbell's Chunky Soup of Air.
Well, yeah, that's just going to make people feel like they're choking and not having a good time. So it is obviously an inflection point in the relationship between the desktop, the Mac or the PC running iTunes and the iOS devices. Really does actually say, look, iOS is a first-class platform. You're not managing this from a computer anymore. In it, like, unless, again, you're running Configuration Manager or Jamf for an MDM solution, and you're managing a fleet of devices. That's still something you can do from a desktop platform. But the individual device experience is going to be through, you know, iCloud in the browser and through the App Store on the device. And you know what? If like us, you know, grizzled old timers, you find the idea of managing, you know, 148 apps. Hey, Jeff, 148 apps, or way more. You find that repugnant as something I'm going to do on a tiny device with my fingers. Well, you know, it's basically get out of the way. Get off my lawn. So
yeah, and I get, like, I understand it, but again, like, there's no countermeasure.
Yeah,
you know, like, give me something that even just give me something that sucks, that at least I can do the one thing I was trying to do that you took away.
Yeah,
that's all I want.
And as a standalone non iTunes, something other than iTunes, but that still has that functionality that I can choose to use or not. Makes sense. I'm actually going to do a micro shout out, not a Mike Rose shout out, but a Mike. Well, I guess it is a Mike Rose shout
it's
out.
Both.
It's both micro and Mike Rose. By the way, you know, little inside baseball at work when people are talking about microservices, everybody turns to me and says drink. Just a little bit of inside humor. The micro shout out is to Lori Duncan at Max Samurai. I'm going to follow up with Lori specifically on this issue because I think that as a roaming Mac and iOS consultant to the Glitterati, as she is, the question of like, how do I make the most effective use of the time that I have with my client's computer and iOS in the same iOS device in the same place? How am I going to get stuff done for them in an efficient manner if I can't do app management out of the box in iTunes? So I'm curious to, and this goes, by the way, for any of our other listeners who are in the business of providing iOS and desktop support, either on a retail or a wholesale basis. What's your plan? Are you going to go with a third-party tool? Are you going to change the way you engage with customers around their iOS devices? What are you thinking? And let us know at @_aftershow, and we'd be happy to hear from you. Because I'm personally curious.
Because I'm very curious about this too. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is not something that I spend a lot of time worrying about now, except for, like, I think about, you know, parents and extended family support, and or even immediate family support. And I can't think when the last time was that I did, you know, any sort of app management from iTunes on a desktop. It's like it just hasn't happened in the last 2 or 3 years for anyone other than me. I mean, I might have, I may have done it for myself.
Well,
but,
and I was so looking forward to iOS 11 because they've got the screen sharing, like, over FaceTime.
That's
from,
like,
your device.
Huge, so for, like, support. Huge. Oh, yes! My God. Huge.
Yes. So the story I'm always fond of telling, when my aunt called me up and said, "Hi, Kelly, I'm calling you from my new iPhone." And I said, "Oh, which one did you get?" And she said, "The green one." Yes. when she gets a phone,
I was muted, like, so you couldn't hear me snicker. I'm so sorry. That is hilarious.
No, it's to me, that will always be funny to me. So, anyway, like, because she calls me about stuff and she wants to know and she wants to understand and she wants me to take the time to explain it. So I'm glad. Yeah. Like, I never have a problem when my phone rings and it's her. I just say, "Hi, what's broken?" You know, and she tells me, and, like, why did it do this? Well, because this happened, and then there was that, and then there's this other thing, and then this is what you do, and then, like, you know, that's how you got where you are. So you were trying to, I know you were trying to this, so what you need to do to make that happen is these other things. I know it looked like that was the way you were supposed to go, but that's, you know, it didn't work. So what you have to do is do it this other way instead. So she lets me tell her how stuff works, how all this is supposed to go. But sometimes it's hard to figure out exactly what she's seeing. And right. So getting the screen sharing is just going to be so much easier because we've had to do stuff where, like, yeah, like,
hold it up to the webcam. Yeah.
Yeah. She calls me from her iPhone so she can FaceTime me and point it at the iPad and go, "Why does it have this error?"
Yep.
So
yep. I've done that. We've all done that. Everybody's done that. No shame.
Yeah. So I'm excited that this is a thing that I'm going to be able to just sort of sort out, that she's going to be able to, you know, hit it. And then I'll be able to see it myself instead of, like, wait, you're not quite in front of the camera. It's not, you know, it's way out of focus. I can't see anything anyway, whatever. So I'm excited that that's a thing that's going to be able to happen. And then, like, it just got worse because I was like, well, I have a backup of your phone on my computer. I can always make sure that that's working. You know, like, absolute worst case, I can put my computer in the car and I can drive to Eastern Oregon and I can restore your phone from this backup.
Right. Well, so, and again, you can still do that, but the experience will be what it is for most people after an iCloud restore. It's the same.
Right.
It's the same experience. The config comes back. All the apps are gray. They're there, but they're gray. And over the following, you know, 2 hours to 2 days, depending on your bandwidth, all your apps slowly come back. And
right.
that is the experience for most people.
And your bandwidth limit. Like, this is the thing that worries me, is that there are a lot of places where people are capped. And, like, I'm going to blow through my cap in a day because I had to restore my phone. Like, that seems like a shenanigan. And that also seems like Apple not necessarily, like, for as much as Apple's trying to be aware by, like, nobody uses this thing, let's take it out, they're also sort of being willfully ignorant of the fact that a lot of people don't have that option. And like, are you going to let me camp out in the Apple store for 2 days and use your Wi-Fi?
Well, that's,
I have a bandwidth cap on my phone.
Or sit in the public library parking lot. That's our second micro shout out is to TJ Luoma, who is a person who has had satellite internet at many
the
times.
First person I think of every time something like this happens. I'm like, TJ is so mad right
TJ
now.
TJ is so mad right now. So yeah, so we're also gonna check in with TJ, which I need to do anyway because I haven't spoken to him in way too long and I miss him. There's another, as you point out, there's a whole different universe of bandwidth experiences that can be, you know, deeply impaired by something like this. And there, and again, those are the reasons that people use the local app repository for restores or for app management can be very diverse. There's lots of good reasons that it is that way. You've already done a service to our listener population by bringing up iMazing, and we'll put some links in, whether it's to TMO or someplace else, to maybe some other options as they come up for app management. But I would suspect that's a road that the bandwidth watchers are probably going to go down.
Well, and not even that, but like, maybe I don't want the updated version of the app for some reason. Like, you know, it's updated to iOS 11 only or something, you know, and I'm on 10 and I don't want that update because it's not going to get me anywhere. Like, I don't necessarily always want the latest version of that stuff either, for a bunch of reasons. Like, you know, I've more than once I've seen people be like, don't download this update, it's going to break everything in the app. You know, wait until they get it fixed, whatever. So yeah, like that's still a thing that is not uncommon.
Yeah.
So.
And you can still do that. I mean, again, you can still do that manually on your phone and simply choose not to update. You just have to. And again, it requires vigilance and personal care and attention, which 99.9% of this market. Remember, again, it's a nation of millions closing. I don't know how many iOS users there are today or devices still in active use, but it's got to be north of 400 or 500 million.
So many people. I'm sure.
Yeah. So that's a huge population. And again, if whether there is a workaround for a particular use case is not necessarily, it's good to know, and these are the things we care about and presumably our listeners care about, but it does not correspond to the appliance model of selling these things, these widgets, these boxes, these tiny computers that are, you know, more powerful than the space shuttle and fit in your back pocket or your front pocket. Not relevant to that.
If they're the right
challenge.
Pants.
The iPhone pants. But I wanted, excuse me, karaoke throat, non-karaoke throat. I wanted to bring up the other thing from the announcement, not the one more thing, the iPhone 10, which looks amazing, not the
but
iPhone 8.
I did love that they had one more thing at the first event they ever had at the Steve Jobs Theater.
Because of course they did.
I want to be jazzed about the phone, but it feels very Spartacus to me, the 20th anniversary Mac.
Yeah.
Like, it's beautiful and lots of people want them, but in real life, that's just not my day to day.
True, but
like, I want it to be my life, but it's not.
But it also,
I totally get that.
Not dissimilar from the 20th anniversary Mac. It's a technology platform where they can afford to take some risks is not the word, but where they can afford to push the envelope a little bit because it is going to be a lower volume object.
They can make some bolder decisions and sort of see where that goes, and then it's almost like a beta.
Yeah, it is the bleeding edge, and the 3D camera, front facing camera is going to be amazing, and the screen's going to be amazing, and everything's going to be amazing, and the 8 looks fantastic. And why is there no iPhone 9? Because 7, 8, 9. And the new
technically it should have been the 7S. It shouldn't have even been the 8.
Well, they haven't been consulting us. I'm personally excited. I'm modestly excited about the 4K Apple TV. I'm really quite excited, surprisingly excited about the Series 3 Apple Watch, because I really love the idea of making Dick Tracy phone calls. I always have. And we're here now, and this is the thing that's actually happening now. This is fantastic.
You know that you already can, right?
I know, but I have to have my phone with me, and it's not the same. Just not the same. I might as well be making the phone call. From my phone. But
I get it.
No, you get it.
Apparently it's going to cost you. Like, I'm really, my hope in this is that there's some sort of standoff where people finally, like, put enough pressure, public pressure on carriers about stuff like this. Because the whole point of it is you don't need an extra line. It can share the phone number you already have. And then yesterday, all the carriers came out and they were like
that's
going to be another $5 or $10 a month, depending who the carrier is. So I really want people to just be like, no,
you know that it's T-Mobile is gonna be the one to say, yeah, you know what, screw this noise.
Yeah, on our plan, it doesn't cost you anything, and I think they're gonna pick up a lot of customers as a result, and I hope that the others take note of that because I really want to see that happen. That's my hope.
Yeah. But it does feel a little bit like nickel and diming, but at the same time, that I can't even remember what the cell term for the functionality is. It's not multi-homed numbers. It's not number portability. That's the much older capability. But there's something specific. There's like some specific carrier plan name for that capability of having multiple devices with the same number. And and it is something that you would normally pay for if it was a second phone with the same number. Which again makes sense because it's another radio that's sitting there. It's like you're not paying for the number. You think, oh, I'm paying for the number. No, you're really paying for the device to have connectivity. And if it were an iPad and an iPhone, you know, you don't care what the number is on that iPad. You're never using that phone number, but it's still a line or it's still an account with the carrier. And in this case, you're saying, well, I have the account, so from a bookkeeping standpoint, it's all one phone number, but it's a different SIM. It's a different device. It's a different endpoint. It's taking up spectrum. It's taking up network space. Taking up bandwidth. So I'm gonna charge you something, and maybe if it's like a premium plan, they bundle it in. But I understand why they're paying. Why you would have to pay for it. It just does feel like nickel and diming because I'm already on this primary contract for my phone.
Right.
So.
And I think, well, and to me, part of what makes it frustrating is just the way that they portrayed it yesterday was how, like with the eSIM, it shares your number, so you don't have to worry about doing any of that. And like, if Apple was able to figure this out and make them behave like they're the same number, then why does the carrier care? And like, to me, because I don't know the technology behind it, and I'm sure as soon as Ben Reithig hears this, he's going to get on the horn with me and be like, okay, here's what's up. But until I get that explanation of why it matters, the only thing I see in this is everybody went to the unlimited texting plan and we need a new way to squeeze you.
Well, I mean, maybe they are figuring that the people who are willing to spend $300 plus on a watch are not going to notice the recurring cost. That may not be correct, but I may not ever get a watch that can take advantage of it. B may not be able to enable that functionality on a corporate plan on my primary phone. Probably not. And C, you know, I'm not surprised that this would be a cost structure that they would go for. I understand the frustration because it's annoying, but speaking of annoying, I got to bring this up while we have a few minutes.
Okay.
The apparently by now legendary Craig Federighi Face of Doom demo fail. You can't see the scare quotes from here, but demo fail. And I got into it a little bit with Philip Elmer.
Because somebody restarted a phone?
Yes. Yeah, okay. So here's the thing. And I got into this a little bit with Phil Elmer DeWitt, and you know, Sean King's all over it, and Peter Cohen's all over it, and everybody's all over it. Here's the thing.
Okay.
A demo can fail even if the technology is working as designed. You know, we accept it as written. the technology in this case, as anybody who has ever used a phone, an iPhone, knows, an iPhone with Touch ID knows how this works. If you
especially
restart
all those people who bitch about battery life, they know when you plug it back in and you power it up enough to be able to go back to the Snapchat or whatever it is you people are doing that's chewing on so much battery. When it comes back.
Yes.
What happens, Mike?
What happens is, before you can use Touch ID to unlock the phone, you have to put in your PIN code or your password one time. And by the way, this can also be true if you just leave the phone, even if it didn't lose charge or even if you didn't turn it off, if you just leave the device idle for more than 24 to 36 hours.
I was going to say, isn't it like a day and a half? Yeah.
Yeah. So like you put your iPad in your bag, you don't use it for a day or two, you take it out and you go to Touch ID and it says, no, we need your PIN. Why? Because it could have left your control or whatever. But that's the thing. And everyone knows that that is how these devices behave. It's not a surprise. Right. However, in the moment, what happened to Craig Federighi, for those who have not watched the, who haven't watched the tape, the film, is that Craig went to pick up his first iPhone X and use Face ID to unlock, and was presented with the very familiar message saying, PIN, you have to face it.
Thanks for playing. Here's, enter a passcode first.
Enter your passcode. Passcode has to be entered after, before Face ID can be used for the, after the reboot. Yeah, it's the exact same message.
It didn't look like it said anything about restarted, and so I have two theories. Theory number one is, we locked everything in on the phone and it was all ready to go yesterday morning. And
exactly.
Or Sunday morning. So then we didn't touch it. Or it's that someone else was standing in front of it and picked it up, to plug in the cables or whatever, and failed at the Face ID because they weren't Air Force One.
Right. Enough times. I mean, who knows? Also, not for nothing.
Yeah,
prototype hardware.
Look at the phone, right? To plug it
right.
in.
They're going to turn on the phone and look at the phone. There's no buttons.
With raise to wake, it's automatically going to try. So this is going to happen to anybody who, for example, this is a common scenario at my house. I will pick up Mr. Kelly's phone because he'll set it down on the counter or something. And I'll pick it up and see that it's at 18% and I'll go plug it in.
Because you're courteous and also married to him and don't want him to be cranky all the time.
That too. So I'll plug it in and with the new one, with the with raise to wake, when I pick it up, it's going to go, is it time? Is it time? And it's going to not be him. And it's going to go, okay, I guess not. And so then if I ever do that for him, then every time he picks it up off the charger, if I put it there, it's going to do the same thing to him.
I don't think that in the final version of iOS 11 for this device, I don't think in November that would cause it to do a double, it wouldn't cause it
no,
to double lock or pin lock.
It might have tried after three failures or something. And who's to say, because somebody took that phone to the theater.
Yeah, could have been a lot of people.
That phone to the podium. Somebody plugged that phone into everything. Somebody, picked it up to make sure it was charged up, or they, picked it up as a test to make sure that when the screen woke up, it was broadcast on the screen or whatever.
Right.
And that could have been a whole bunch of different people. So there could have been a number of failures. I'm surprised it wasn't wrong. Try again in 1800 minutes.
But here's the thing. To me, it is irrelevant how it got to that state. I mean, there's a lot of different quantum paths it could have taken to get to the state where it required a PIN. The point is that that is in no way unfamiliar, broken, or bug-related functionality. It's simply the way the phone works.
No, it's
so,
just regular.
Rather than...
I didn't think anything of it.
Right. So rather than putting in the PIN and sort of breaking the narrative of, look, I unlocked it with my face, because then you'd have to put in the PIN, lock it again, and then demonstrate Face ID, which wouldn't have been as compelling. He's like, oh, we're going to switch to the other phone. And he did it with the other phone, and it was fine. Now, right. I will publicly say, this is a demo fail. It is a failure of the demo because it broke the experience for the audience. They saw behind the curtain for a second. They saw him had to switch devices. So the demo, the theatrical aspect of it, not great. It didn't go as planned. Completely accept that as a premise. What I do not accept, and what I will push back on, is that it was a Face ID fail.
Oh, absolutely not.
And that Face ID is in some way, by this demonstration, has been implicated as not reliable. Bull crap. It is not that.
It did exactly what it's supposed to
exactly.
do. You'd be more freaked out if it had worked.
Right. That would have been, that would have maybe been, they turned something off to make it happen. But, like, to me, if people are saying, well, this means that Face ID is not going to work and people are going to have their phone stuck. No, you are drawing conclusions that are not supported by what you saw with your own two eyes. And anyone who has one, who has a phone with Touch ID, has had this experience. Now, this
I've seen people complain about it so much.
Yeah, it's not a secret. So I am firmly of the opinion that this is not going to impair the sale of a single device, because there will not be enough to go around. But I think it is important. Like, when
perception is key, because remember the whole thing with, you know, bending phones, turned out there were six.
Antenna gate, bending phones, and you can go really old school and go back to the Newton and the handwriting recognition. And the handwriting recognition could have been fantastic. And after the Doonesbury week of, you know, lunch with Blop at Burger King, forget it. The public perception of that technology was defined.
Demolished forever. Yeah.
Right. So it is important for again, listeners, you're the Mike and Kelly's army, the after show army, the after show irregulars. We are counting on you when your friends say, well, I heard Face ID doesn't work because, you know, guy with the gray hair, like, couldn't unlock his phone. You have to get in their face and say, excuse me, ma'am. Excuse me, mom. I don't know why your mom talks like a Teamster from New Jersey, but excuse me, Aunt Sally, but that's not correct. And you have to trust me, because I'm the one who fixes your phone. I'm telling you, the stuff is real. It's going to work. Pay no mind to those, you know, crazy people on Hotmail. So that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, it's like, I didn't realize so much was going to be made of it, because I'm like, oh, they restarted the phone, or
locked.
You know, like, it looked at somebody else before, because remember there were other people standing at that podium, and if one of them picked up a phone, and if one of them picked up the wrong phone mistakenly or whatever, it was going to be like, is it time? Oh, fail.
Yep.
So, you know, it could have been just the course of the demo that made that happen. Like, that's easy. So I don't know what to, like, there's no there, which is, hurts me to say, but it's just the truth. Like, everyone who has used Touch ID for more than, I'll say, a month, to be extra generous, has seen this happen.
Yeah. And it's the same underlying, like, the iOS, the operating system, does not care how you got to the point of authenticating to your device. Doesn't care whether it was a fingerprint, a passcode, or your face. Doesn't care.
Right.
Either you're in or you're out. Either it's Kelly or it's Mr. Kelly. It doesn't matter. But the point is that, of course, at some level, Face ID and Touch ID are going to behave the same way. Yeah, it's frustrating. A little frustrating.
Yeah, because it totally did what it was supposed to do. And so I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. So,
like, I really actually thought, oh, someone else picked up the demo phone and was the person who did all the AV setup. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And I was watching it live at that point, and I did cringe when Craig said out loud, switch to backup, because of course you never say that.
Right.
You never say that. But then people are like, oh, well, you know, the device failed. I'm like, no. You're not old enough, people who are complaining, with the exception of Phil Elmer DeWitt, but you're not old enough to remember Steve Jobs throwing a quick take into the second row.
Oh, my God. Yes. Well, and then there was a dead battery remote. iPhone note?
The Steve Jobs Theater
maybe
backstage should have a wall of everything Steve has thrown into the audience. Should just, like, have little curator plates underneath each one. It says, you know, Apple TV remote, dead battery, you know, 1999. And just, like, it should just be that stuff.
Oh, my God. That would be amazing. I would love that.
Yeah. So you people who are like, demo fail, it's like, okay, yes, the demo did not go as planned. There was a
that's not that's not a failure of anything, though.
But that's not, yeah. That and like nobody goes back and says, well, you know, that camera, I think actually it was a Canon camera that he was using to demo iPhoto, if memory serves. It doesn't. It never does at these days, I'll tell you for sure. But I don't think it was an Apple digital camera. I think it was a third-party camera that he was plugging in and trying to download photos into iPhoto and show iPhoto functionality. Yeah. And in a fit of pique, threw it into the audience. And you can look that up on YouTube. And
it's
you can
totally see, a thing.
It's totally a thing that happened. So yeah. Craig Federighi, who is not a crazy person with incredible insecurities, as far as I know, did not do that. He is not a sociopath / CEO, as so many are, and so did not do that, and very calmly switched to his backup, which is exactly what you're supposed to do. Just don't say that you're doing that. Anyway,
but
so,
I sort of liked that he did say it, and I liked, I like,
it's transparency. I mean, there's something to be said.
But he was like, "Yeah, hey, not this one. Let's move over here."
And you know what? It's actually not. It's funny, but not incredibly funny. Is that within an hour of that happening, I was doing a demonstration that involved an iPhone in front of a room of 100 people, and found that when I switched to my iPhone in my QuickTime session that was showing my iPhone, the QuickTime movie or QuickTime screen mirroring was locked. And so I had to say out loud as I'm talking, it's like, well, let me just, I'm going to unplug the phone here and plug it back in. And I had talked through it because I was standing there. Yeah. And I did. And it was fine. And it worked. And I went on from there. There's craft. There's trade craft of demoing, of, you know, misdirection. And let me, let me tell you about this while I'm making this change. You don't say technical issue. You don't say switch to backup. You don't say crash. You don't say bug. You continue with a narrative while the problem is resolved.
Right.
But if you do it, and this is hard, and it's hard in the moment, and I say this as somebody with improvisational experience, it's very hard in the moment not to say, forgive me, like not to beg the audience's forbearance as you address the foul up. You shouldn't do it. It's really hard not to, because the minute you say that and you say, I'm sorry, or you ask them to give you that moment, you've highlighted, you've lampshaded the flaw, or you've lampshaded the issue.
Right.
And the more you can, I've seen this done, and every now and then I've done it myself. It's really hard. But if you can continue moving and talking and having that conversation with the audience as you fix the problem, they may never know there was an issue. They might, and you come out sweating as I did. I went back in the room like, wow, like I've got flop sweat all over me, and said to a colleague, oh, you know, I had that thing with the phone at the top. And I'm like, what are you talking about? There's no thing with the phone. I'm like, what do you mean? You didn't notice that like 8 seconds of eternity where the phone wasn't updating?
Yeah, it was a 2-hour presentation. I spent an hour on the 8 seconds where the phone was failing, and then I spent an hour on the rest of the presentation. Where were you? Yeah.
So I knew viscerally, I mean, some tiny fraction of what Craig Federighi felt as he's in front of, you know, 1 million or 2 million or 5 million people, including, you know, 2,000 in that theater, or how many fit in the Steve Jobs Theater. I had that in a room full of 100 people in Pittsburgh in a tiny way. So I know the feeling. But I think he handled it well. I think, sure, you want to call it demo fail, or you want to call it face gate or whatever, fine. But let's recall that.
Let's talk about how the security did what the security was supposed to do. You talk about the demo all you want to, but everybody knows this is how this goes.
Let's talk about what would have happened if Craig had said, hey, let me bring out my friend, the chief security officer of Equifax. You can throw fruit at him.
Yeah.
That would have been fun. I mean, that would have been fun for me. We're running so long. We had so much to talk about. There's new stuff, and we'll talk next time about apps you can use in emergencies, because you did mention some. I want to talk more about the walkie-talkie apps in Zello. I want to talk about Beartooth and some of the other like non-cellular network stuff for communication. But the thing I got to mention before we do shout outs, right before the show, got the email from the organization formerly known as the Impossible Project. Now, Kelly, do you know what the Impossible Project is?
Are they the people with film?
They are the people with film.
Okay.
That is correct. So the Impossible Project, you're exactly right. Polaroid stopped making cameras, stopped making film, became a brand without a home, and branded a lot of, you know, crappy USB hubs and stuff and whatever. But this crazy band of freaks and geeks leased the factory, bought the equipment, reverse engineered the instant film, and started making it again. And they called themselves the Impossible Project. And for the past 5 or 6 years, they have been making Polaroid instant film for the SX600 and the One Step and their own camera model, which they put together. And they've been doing this. And this is like this crazy crowdsourced, crowdfunded, you know, quixotic, nutty thing to do to sustain this old technology. But they've done it. And now, in one of the strangest branding inversions one could have possibly imagined, the Impossible Project has, I don't know if they've just licensed it, I think they've actually bought the Polaroid trademark.
What?
And are now selling film and cameras as Polaroid originals, including...
Oh my God, Becky!
It's Becky. It's definitely Becky. And including a new model camera that they're introducing that's coming out in October. And this, to me, is amazing. And
that's
so
awesome. I'm super excited.
So if you're wondering why 2017 will be exactly like 1977, this is it. So I'm psyched. I have bought their film before. I actually have an SX70 that I got from my stepfather, which has light leaks and is doesn't it works, but it doesn't actually take pictures. It takes like gray, like ghost images because of the light leaks, picture approximations. But I'm really psyched. I'm going to buy one of these cameras, and I'm excited about it. So this is a thing you should check out. Polaroid Originals. I think they're on Twitter, and they have their website. And so if you had followed the Impossible Project, you will now find yourself following Polaroid Originals. So check it out.
I have a couple of friends who picked up those Instax cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, yeah, you know, I kind of fell in love with like getting to take film pictures all over again. It's pretty great. So I'm excited to see this coming back.
So I am as well. Do you have and it's us.polaroidoriginals.com. Do you have a cool pick for the week that you would like to share with the peoples?
Man, I can't beat the return of Polaroid.
No, it's tough.
Yeah. A cool thing this week. You know, I'm going to say, and I know that this is going to sound cheesy, but I feel like this week it's sort of necessary. And that's like, take 5 minutes out of your life and go do something and go be kind to somebody, like whether it's shoot somebody a nice text message or pick up somebody's lunch or buy the coffee of the person behind you or whatever it is, like just go do that random thing because you never know like how valued that is going to be by somebody else. Once in a great while, I'll be at, you know, I'll be driving through something or whatever and like order a cup of coffee or whatever. And they'll be like, oh, the person in front of you paid for it. And like that's happened to me every once in a while, and it's always really nice. And so, you know, you get that nice text message from somebody who says, yeah, this is the thing that you did that really helped me out, and I really appreciate that. Or, you know, like, what can I do to help you with the thing? Like every single person who sent me some money so that I could go fill the Outback and take stuff out to firefighters. Like every one of those people I was super duper grateful for. And I sent them like 5 messages back. Like, this is so amazing of you to do. Thank you so much. And every one of them was like, it's just some money. And I'm like, yeah, but it's a concrete thing. Like I can go buy, you know, I can go buy something specific and I can go hand it to somebody who's really going to appreciate it. And so finding those little concrete things that can be helpful, I feel like that was infinitely more valuable to me than being able to text $10 to the Red Cross.
Yeah. And you were able to do it personally, which is fantastic, and you're able to get out there and face-to-face help the people. Yeah. So face-to-face theme for the week, whether it's with a Polaroid picture, which always makes people happy, or a trunk full of IKEA schmorgbudev towels. Heard of Flergen towels. Listener shout-outs. Hi, Chris Fuller. Hi, Lori Duncan.
Hi, Chris Fuller.
Hi,
Javi, because I'm an optimist.
Hi, Javi. Even though we didn't talk about Javi's projects this week.
Oh, my God.
Hi, TJ. Hi, Info Driveway.
Hi, Phone Boy.
Hi, Brittany.
Hi, Diane.
Hi, Bill Frazier.
Diane needs to know that there's a new shirt coming.
Okay. Officially marked down.
Yes. Because like I keep showing you guys the shirts that the Star Wars silkscreen ones, like the Rey anything, which makes me inordinately happy, all of that kind of stuff. Those are pretty great. So I will have news on that front shortly. Yeah.
Kelly, where can the people find you?
You can find me on Twitter as Verso, and you can find me on a whole truckload of podcasts these days. I started doing stuff here and there on the Incomparable Network. So the most recent thing I did was an episode of Game Show. I'm about to compete in the Disney animated movie Draft when we do the Draft episode. You can hear me on the Daily Observations podcast, because I don't remember if I said that before I started with all the Incomparable stuff. And mostly you can find me on Twitter, and when I am doing other stuff, I talk about it there. So Twitter's probably the best place.
Fantastic. And you can, it's a good place to look for you. And you can also find me on Twitter at Mike T. Rose. You hopefully will also be able to find me soon in somewhere in the New York area hosting a weekly quiz for Geeks Who Drink. So we will be doing pub quizzes. Yes. This is a thing that I am going to be doing this fall, and I'm very excited about it. As soon as I know where and when that will be, it will probably be on Tuesday nights. It will probably be in Manhattan, but it is all a little TBD at this point. I'm very excited. Awesome. It's a lot of fun. And if you've not gone out to a Geeks Who Drink.
Those are hosted by Elmer Fudd.
Yeah. Hunting Waskily pub quizzes.
Waskily trivia.
No, it's pub quiz, not trivia. Very important. But the pub quizzes that Geeks Who Drink runs are all excellent and very enjoyable, and they are found most nights except Saturday nights at a tavern or establishment near you. So check out geekswhodrink.com for details. And as soon as I know where I will be, I will let you know. You can find our show on the interwebs at aftershowpodcast.com. You can find us on Twitter at the_aftershow. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will be back again soon.